Before you decide where you stand on a sports issue, let Bob weigh in. He's got a pretty heavy opinion. Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So here's what I know. Yes, that's probably about it. I've never done hot yoga before, but I'm pretty sure it's no hotter than this studio is right now. Jesus, are Sam and Ted trying to lose weight, or what exactly are they doing in here? It's 1,000 degrees in here every day when I come in. They're not exactly, fatzos. They're okay. Yeah, well, I'd be checking my deodorant if I were you, too. Honest to Rudy. It's a steam bath. And then I turn it down to a comfortable 69 degrees. Just a number. And then Cox screams at me because it's too cold in here. I don't know. It's Thursday, the 12th of January, 2012. And, hang on, let me check my underwear. I'm Bob McCowan. Damian Cox will join us a little bit later on. Shocking news 2 days in a row. Later on the program, Burt Randolph Sugar, boxing historian. Glenn Healy, hockey analyst for CBC. Fox Sports baseball analyst John Paul Morosi. And the managing general of the Toronto Blue Jays, Alex Anthopoulos, joins us in studio for two segments today. Oh, that'll be lively. Beginning at 5:20. What an offseason it has been. The natives are restless. After exhibiting extraordinary patience for the past couple of seasons, Blue Jay fans have their daggers out. They are some pissed with the perception that the organization has not added the kind of players they would have expected. Not spent the money that fans had hoped they would spend. And, I mean, we had a caller on yesterday, and to talk about it in terms of just dollars and cents, I don't subscribe to, I never have. But to talk about it in terms of who you acquire and who you do not is fair. And if that means that you don't dip into Rogers' vault of unfolded cash, well, you have to do that at some point. But we're like Sonic the Hedgehog tapping our feet here, waiting for that to happen. Now, you think that's bad? You think the fans here, baseball fans in Toronto, are pissed? Get on the VIA train, go to Montreal. You'll see some unhappy people. From the pages of the Montreal Gazette, here's our friend Michael Boone. Michael, how are you?
Hey, Bob, I'm fine. Well, I'm better than you. I want to thank you for sharing your male menopausal symptoms with us this afternoon.
I'm actually pretty good. I'm actually in a pretty good mood. I'm all right, except it's like
too warm.
Steam bath, man.
Yeah. Well, I don't for you, man.
I don't like
no
that.
One likes stink down here.
So, have you hit all the sharp instruments in Montreal? I mean, can you get anything other than plastic knives and forks when you go into a restaurant there now? I mean, I'm thinking there's a lot of suicidal people in Montreal these days.
Well, the good part of it is that, you know, Quebec is among Canada's greener provinces, which means paper bags, virtually nobody uses them anymore when they shop, so we can't wear them on our heads. And if you wear, you know, a plastic one or a reusable,
you'll
it's
die.
Not the same effect. You'll die. Yeah. Which is, you know, better than having to watch this team, I will grant you. But
ouch.
Still, it's rather drastic.
Well, look, you know, a tie is a catastrophe in Montreal. We get that. Mind you, there's no ties anymore in the National
League. That's right.
But this is a different kettle of fish altogether. When was the last time it was this way, this bad?
Wow.
Ever?
Yeah, I think he would almost have to dip into the war years or something like that.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was driving and thinking about this. I said, when was it like this? I mean, you know, there have been a couple of off seasons, but, you know, the bar is very high in Montreal, and we respect that. And so, you know, and here in Toronto, we laugh at you guys because, you know, the Canadians are fifth overall in the standings, and everybody's apoplectic. And here in Toronto, we'd kill for fifth. But this is a totally different animal now. This is it looks like this whole thing is off the rails.
Yeah. Well, the bar is high and they're open late. And I think the realization at closing time is beginning to dawn that this ain't going to happen. And I think, you know, people are facing up to that and starting to wonder what a lottery draft pick or something like that is going to look like. Because you don't have to be a math genius to look at the standings and realize that they would basically, in the second half, have to win twice as often as they lose to punch their ticket to the dance. And that ain't going to happen based on what we've seen so far. They're just not very good. Hey, you know, happens, right?
Yeah.
Happens in other cities. This hasn't happened all that often here, but maybe it's something that we have to get used to as we move into year 8 of the 5-year rebuild that Bob Gainey planned.
With Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette. So Camilleri's comments, how are they being received?
I think the furor has died down somewhat. In the immediate aftermath, there's a very popular television show called L'Antichambre, where they get on and they chew over the Canadians on a daily basis for about an hour. And the way they were spinning it last night was that, Camilleri's comments were a veiled demand to be traded. He backed off from them somewhat today after morning skate.
They all do.
Yeah, of course. He said he didn't really want to talk about it. And there's a big argument about, about whether he said it was a losing mentality or a loser's mentality. Listen, Mike Camilleri is a very smart dude. You know, he knows he spins the press masterfully. He knows what he's talking about. For most of the guys in that room, semantics is the goon that used to protect Wayne Gretzky. This guy knows exactly what he's saying when he says it. And I think, he's taken the measure of what's going on here, and I think he realizes that he would be among the more attractive targets on February 27th or earlier for a team that needs a sniper to make a run. You know, today he was saying, oh, he loves Montreal, his family loves Montreal, yada, yada. They all say that. But I think he realizes that the team is going nowhere and that he personally is absolutely floundering. This guy makes $6 million. He's got 9 goals. His defense is horrible. In yesterday's rant, he came up with this fanciful interpretation that the fact that he was pretty much responsible for 2 St. Louis goals was attributable to insufficient ice time. He hadn't had a chance to warm up or something. Totally ridiculous. He's a horrible defensive forward, and everybody knows it. And by the end of the St. Louis game, he was being booed. And it's going to get worse. Now with Gionta injured, I think the crowd down here, they love a whipping boy, and I think he's going to be it. It's going to be very interesting to hear the music emanating from the not-so-cheap seats on Saturday night.
It would be more, I think you would concede, it would probably be more, his comments would be more valid if he was the lone shining light in an otherwise dark and dismal season. By your own documentation just now, he's not that guy. In fact, he's part of the problem, not necessarily part of the solution, at least at this point in time. Does that mitigate how people feel about him? In other words, instead of opening a door and letting some fresh air in, is it being perceived that Camilleri, is a bum, ain't playing any good, and trying to deflect the blame?
That is exactly how it's being perceived. A selfish player has decided to whine rather than look in the mirror. If this were coming from Carey Price or Josh Georges or a couple other players, even a Travis Moan, players that everyone knows have left nothing out on the ice since the season began, they could say anything about the team. This guy just doesn't have the right to, as far as I'm concerned.
With Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette. I may be way off base here, but it's hard for me to imagine George Gillette letting it get to this point. Now, I know that George isn't really, never has been a hands-on kind of guy. He's around, but not necessarily a hands-on kind of guy. But I don't think he would allow things to get to this point. Has anybody talked about, I mean, I know they've talked about the coach. We know they've talked about the general manager. Has anybody talked about ownership?
Only during the language flap, when when Molson quickly, well, quicker than his PR department, realized that this was a total debacle and that he had to, you know, he's got to sell a few bottles of pop in this province and that maybe he should come out with a statement supporting the concept, at least, of a bilingual coach. I would take issue a little bit, Bob, with your description of Gillette. Gillette was a hands-off guy who believed that Bob Gainey was a hockey genius and should have as much latitude as possible.
I grant you, you're right. You're right. You are right. But I do know George personally, and I know his. I know that if he felt like he needed to stick his nose in and make something happen, he would do it. I'm not sure how often that happened over his 8 or 9 years in Montreal. Probably not very often. But I think he would have done it. And you didn't have a situation quite like this. And I'm wondering whether there's any sense that certainly the general manager and perhaps higher than that need to be held responsible.
Oh, I think the general manager is toast. I mean, they'd practically have to, they would need an extremely deep playoff run, which ain't going to happen, to save Pierre Gauthier's ass. There's just no way.
Is there somebody out there that is being touted as a replacement? And if so, is that somebody, why not make the move now?
There's talk of Serge Savard coming back.
There's
a hot rumor today that Jeff Molson had lunch with Serge Savard. Serge Savard was a very good general manager in the pre-lockout, pre-rules change, prehistory, dinosaurs roam the earth era.
Granted.
I don't know that you can bring him back after 20 years away.
Yeah.
A name that my buddy Michael Farber mentioned to me is Claude Loiseau. You know,
heard that one too.
Francophone bloodlines,
yep.
Lawyer by training, works with Burke in what is kind of a bloated managerial structure in Toronto.
Yep.
That would be a possible name. I don't think they're going to do it. I'm about to contradict myself. On the one hand, I can't see them doing it during the season just because they've had about as much turmoil as they can handle, and you want a guy to have an absolutely fresh start and rebuild from the ground up, and that's easier to do in the off season. On the other hand, do they want a doomed general manager supervising the sell-off come February 27th. They're certainly not going to have a doomed general manager sitting at the draft table with a lottery pick.
Well,
and
I mean,
it's not going to happen. No way, Jose. No.
Yeah, and that's exactly my point, is that traditionally, changes have been made prior to the draft, or an attempt has been made to have your new staff, your new management team in place prior to the draft. And while that makes some sense to me, it is arguable that what will happen between now and the end of February is far more impactful for the future of the Montreal Canadiens than what will happen at the draft table in June or July. Far more impactful. Far more important. Who do you let go? What do you get back? What is the direction you are going to go? The draft rarely answers any of those questions. But trades prior to the deadline do. And if I'm going to make a change in the general manager, I'm making that change right now because you still have 4 or 5 weeks in order to assemble some sort of plan. Agree or disagree?
Everything you said makes sense, Bob. But if you know, to be part of the atmosphere down here, we're not used to the Marx Brothers running the Montreal Canadiens, and I think so much change. You know, they fire the assistant coach, they fire the head coach. That doesn't work. You know, they fire the general manager. I mean, well, what's next? It would give off the feeling that the gargoyles have taken over the cathedral. You know, I think that, I think Gauthier can probably, you know, with working with Gainey and with Molson, can make a decent analysis of what they've got and what they've need and supervise a sell-off. Almost any person sitting in a tavern in Montreal that follows hockey has a pretty good idea of who ought to go and who ought to stay. But you know, I'll stick to my prediction. I think that the, I guess it's April 9th, they play the Leafs at the Bell Center. I think that's the last hockey game they're going to play this season. And by April 14th or so, we're going to have a new general manager.
I'd do it now. I mean, you talked about the Marx Brothers running the show. I mean, in that scenario, you know, it's Groucho Gauthier, you know, in my mind.
Not as funny.
Well, I don't see an. I mean, if he's not the general manager at the draft, I don't see why he's a general manager at the trade deadline. If this team has to be imploded and start over, and Lord knows, you have come to the right place to look for counsel in that, because we've had 50 years of that crap going on here. We know exactly how that works and how you do it and how you don't do it. And one of the things you don't do is have a lame duck general manager who you know is going to go do anything. I mean, I'd have him clean out his office tomorrow. I don't want him approving a request for pens. I don't want him doing anything anymore if he's not going to be the guy.
They have to fire Gainey while they're at it. I think I get the feeling he's a little bit of the puppet master.
So?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if I'm a Montreal Canadiens fan, I love Bob Gainey. I love the image of Bob Gainey. I love the history of Bob Gainey. I loved Bob Gainey as a player. He was the prototype Montreal Canadian. What has Bob Gainey done since he took over as general manager of the Montreal Canadiens and in his consulting or whatever role he has now? What's the net result?
I can't dispute your logic, Bob. You're bang on. But being on the ground and feeling the emanations and vibrations down here, I don't think he's going to make another major change before the season is over. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, with my record of correct predictions, you know, he'll probably get fired tomorrow morning. So,
is it your assessment the fan base is demanding of this kind of move?
No, I think the realization, as delusional as we are, and
yeah,
we stand second to nobody.
Correct.
In the delusion department.
That is true.
I think the realization has set in that it's not a very good hockey team. It needs major renovations and a rebuild, and let's be adults about it and roll up our sleeves and get to work on it.
Who would you not trade?
Carey Price, P.K. Subban, Josh Georges, although asterisk with Georges. You know, he signed long-term, could be a valuable piece for a team making a deep run in the playoffs. Max Pacioretty. I'm probably overlooking guys. I'm just trying to roll through lines in my mind. Eric Cole, they probably gave him too much term, but he's been the most valuable player so far. He's great in the room.
You can stop every night. Already you can stop.
Okay.
Every name on that list is wrong. If you are going to rebuild, you have to be prepared to give something away. You have to be.
Hey, Mike Camilleri, price to move. Our operators are standing by to take your call.
Yeah, but he's easy. And he's playing like a piece of crap. I mean, you're going to get, you know, a cheese sandwich in return.
Okay,
you
need
a tangible asset. Well, as another one.
Yeah.
You want to get rid of all. See, this is what you need to understand here, Boone. Been there, done that. Got that t-shirt. I can give you a dozen general managers who've come to through Toronto and sold off all the crap and got nothing in return and never improved the club. You don't gain without risk. You must get rid of tangible assets, or at least one. Now, if you'd given me one guy or two guys, then we'd have had a discussion on the others. So if you say, I wouldn't trade Subban, I'd say, okay, fine. But would you trade Price? You've got to be prepared to do one or the other, I think.
Okay. Do you want me to make a choice? I'd
make
Price
a choice
and trade Subban.
I think that would be the right decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. But see, you get something for Subban.
You would.
And you get something for him before the trade deadline. And see, I'd be shopping him like a crazy man right now.
Maybe they are.
For who
as
knows?
Much as we know about what
that,
goes on in
you're
the
absolutely right.
down there. You know?
You're absolutely right. Yeah. But I mean, I don't have any particular confidence in the general manager or his willingness to recognize that what he has wrought is a mess. But maybe I'm underestimating him. Maybe he's smarter than I think he is. all evidence to the contrary, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Boone.
Yep.
You're the best. Thanks, pal.
Thanks, Bob.
Have a nice day.
Take care, bud.
You too. Hide the sharp instruments. I'm told they're serving beer at Hurley's in plastic cups these days. For fear someone will smack a glass and attack somebody. Or themselves. Alex Anthopoulos later, Glenn Healy, John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports. The legendary Burt Randolph Sugar joins us next. Floyd Mayweather calls out Manny Pacquiao. Really? We'll talk about it when primetime continues on the Fan and Sports Night.
Covering the NBA, focusing on the Raptors, Hoops, tonight at 7. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Well, so that'll be interesting. A little bit later on, Reverend Andrew Sheldon, professor at the University of Toronto, will join us in studio. The Reverend believes that Tim Tebow's words and actions suggesting God has an opinion is problematic. The Rev says this? This is going to be good. Can we get Tebow on the other line? We'll address that situation coming up. Reverend Andrew Sheldon, man of God, man of the cloth. How can you slag Tim Tebow? He loves Jesus. John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports, Glenn Healy of CBC, the managing general of the Toronto Blue Jays, Alex Anthopoulos, for two segments. Yummy. Bud Foist. Floyd Mayweather calls out Manny Pacquiao. Isn't it supposed to be the other way around? Didn't it used to be the other way around? Now all of a sudden it's Floyd. Here's the legendary Burt Randolph Sugar. Dr. Sugar, how are you?
Bob, I think I'm fine. I had a little setback, and I'm doing much better, thank you.
That's good. The last time we had you on, I was very worried about you.
Well, I spent 15 days in a hospital.
I heard.
And I finally checked out because I grew tired of green Jell-O, which they serve with every meal.
Yeah, and they do.
And they found everything wrong with me except maybe my case of terminal acne had gone. You know, you just put them in, let's find something wrong with them. And I spent 15 days in the hospital and came out, and I'm still recuperating. But I'm getting better, thank you.
Did you ask about the Jell-O when you were there?
Well, I wanted, like they do at some of the blue-haired ladies' parties, to put some carrot shreds in the green Jell-O.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
That always makes it a twofer.
The last time I was incarcerated in the in a hospital.
Good word.
So they brought me this Jell-O, and I said, "Why do you insist on serving everyone this Jell-O? Do you think this is the most popular dessert item in the world? Do you know the last time I actually had Jell-O outside of a hospital? Never, because I don't care for Jell-O."
Well, even Bill Cosby won't mention it in the commercials he's done.
Exactly.
What? Jell-O?
Really?
I'm old enough, I remember when J-E-L-L-O was a sponsor of Jack Benny.
Wow. We're going to do Mad Men again? No, we'll do that another time.
Yes.
I must tell you, one of my all-time favorite episodes is when we did the Mad Men thing. You know that.
You mean our episode, not theirs?
Ours, yeah. You and I talking about your old days in Madison
better.
Avenue.
It gets better because the stories get better.
Well, I know. Well, they get less truthful, but better.
Well, look, in advertising, we were all tale tellers, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So some of that creeps in to our discussion. Now, whatever it was we were talking about was real, but by the time it's encrusted and and enfolded in other tales, it looks like that game we played as kids, telephone. Remember that? Somebody would say something to the person next to him. I just shot my mother. And by the time he came out on the end of 10 or 12 or 15 people, it was, I just was elected president or something. Who in the hell knows? It bears no resemblance. And that's exactly what advertising's about.
Floyd Mayweather now says he wants to fight Manny Pacquiao.
On May 15th. Not May 16th or 31st, May 15th, and if he has no date, then to hell with it, I'm going back to sleep. And that's the way it comes out. Sure, he says it. I won't believe it till he climbs in the ring and the bell sounds.
Well, this was the same Floyd Mayweather whose camp accused Manny Pacquiao of taking drugs, wanted him to take tests, refused to go ahead with a fight if he didn't submit to drug testing, and seemed to use every excuse in the book to avoid such a fight. And now it is Mayweather and his camp who are calling out Pacquiao, saying, come fight, we want to do it? Are you buying it?
You know, he's not doing that just to L.A., A-L-L-A-Y. Basically, the criticism he begot for his stance. You know, I can call him out. The fact that he might not answer the phone doesn't make any difference. I'll believe it, Bob, when they both climb in the ring and the bell sounds. Up to then, I'm still a non-believer. I get the feeling that somebody told him to say something.
Yeah. So you think Pacquiao would say yes, or will ultimately say yes, but Floyd will find a way not to, to engage in this confrontation?
I still question whether the fight will ever happen.
Right.
You know, here's Pacquiao. He's a congressperson from the Philippines. Has his eye on higher offices, mind you. I don't know if he's got enough shoes to compete with the legacy of Imelda Marcos. But, he's not going to be around forever. And here's Floyd, and he's 34, no spring chicken, at least in the chronology of a boxer. And the point being that you might as well do this because it ain't going to happen as of this moment.
What's the window for interest in this fight as one of the great fights of our time? I think it's probably no more than 18 months.
I don't know that it's that long.
Might not be.
I think by the end of the year, it's over.
Yeah.
And already people are settling in for that May 15th date. It's been put on reserve. And then there are just a few more dates, and then we go on to the next year. And maybe these two fighters will have decided there must be something else they can do. Here's Floyd, who does 24/7s talking through and to his money. I mean, you know, what's he need? Pacquiao, meanwhile, has done very well for himself over there in the Philippines or throughout the world. So, you know, it's not money that's going to drive him. Albeit people say that the more money you have, the more money you want.
That's right.
You know, it comes to a point you can't count the damn stuff. What good is it?
Well, it may be true, but you were right. I think you were right the first time. You got it. You want more. Having said that, well, there, you know, in historically, there have been issues over, and maybe most of the time, who gets what in of the purse. And any time you have two guys who perceive themselves to be the best, the champion, you may have a catfight. Is this, or are these guys going to easily agree to a 50-50 split or something approaching that?
There are all kinds of ways. I mean, the world's negotiable. Understand that to begin with. That said, suppose it's 50-50 or suppose it's 60-40 Mayweather. And Pacquiao keeps the rights to the Orient. You know who's going to get more money?
Pacquiao.
Pacquiao.
Yeah.
If he keeps the rights to the Philippines, he gets more money.
Yeah.
You know, it depends how they break this up. There are all kinds of arguing points as well as, you know, pressure points. And they can carve it up any other way. It's the bounce back. If we get over such and such million, then you get this. Yes. As I said, the world's negotiable.
Go ahead.
And anything can happen in a push-me-pull-you negotiation.
With Burt Randolph Sugar, you and I can remember the days when they used to, on a regular basis, construct an aluminum or steel temporary stadium on the tennis courts on the back lot of Caesar's Palace.
Oh, that was fun.
It was, and it was actually a pretty good venue, if you want to know the truth.
There was not a bad seat. It looked like a...
it wasn't.
It looked like a Lego set.
Well, but basically it was built around a, you know, a 20-foot ring. And I mean, there were some seats on the floor, but, you weren't that far away, no matter where you were.
No, there wasn't a bad seat. You were further away from the beer concession,
yeah,
which I found out, than you were from the ring.
Well, Pancho Gonzalez may not have been happy because he couldn't hit balls. But other than that,
he was the house pro, by the way.
Yes, he was.
You knew that.
I knew. That's why I said that.
Yeah, but maybe your audience didn't. They're not as.
I'm not here for them, Bert. I'm here for me.
I love it. I love it.
So
let them eat cake or microphones or something.
So that was, if my memory serves me, and I'm sure it varied, but I was there on numerous occasions in the 80s, I guess. I mean, I don't know if I went in the 70s. But certainly, when we had Duran and Hagler and Leonard fighting each other, it seemed like every couple of months. And my recollection was about 25,000. Is that what you remember?
I think it was closer to 20. It didn't matter. Okay. It was just it had the feel of a little comfortable arena.
Yeah.
Although there were thousands there.
Yeah. So now they're talking about a 40,000-seat outdoor facility in Las Vegas, because Bob Arum says, why would we go to the MGM Grand Gardens, which seats 16,000, when we could fill 40,000 if we built something outdoors? Are you for that?
He's not going to do it. He's going to
Promoter,
somebody else.
Somebody else will do it, of course. One of the casinos.
It's not as if they're not having some financial problems in Vegas.
I hear you.
I don't know where in the hell they put it. Maybe on the median on the strip. he's got the best of all worlds. And the casinos, mind you, unless they're putting it adjacent to their casino, are not really interested because they don't make their money so much as on the fight, which if they do, they're ahead of the game.
Right, they make it on the drop.
Yeah, and the drop is you have to walk through the casino to get to the arena.
That's what it used to be at Caesars, right?
Yeah. And you would notice, and I'd get there early. I had to cover the fight and do some work for HBO. But I'd always notice the table, it had a $10 minimum.
Yeah, not before fight or after.
On Tuesday, it went to 20 on Wednesday, 30 on Thursday,
oh, yeah.
50 on Friday, and by Saturday it was 100.
But the interesting thing was, you could when there was no fight on, you could get to the tennis center without going through the hotel. There was a back entrance off Industrial, I think.
Now they want you to walk through every damn table.
Oh, yeah.
They even have a red strip in the Mirage. I remember it looked like the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow this line, right?
Yeah, you follow this, and it had more S's and squirrels than a ski route. And you would just go through every damn table in the place. Just in case you forgot why you're here.
No, I know. You dare not pause for about a moment.
And, I never considered myself handsome. I can get away with what I look like. And several years ago, I remember I'd just be walking around. Girls would come up and grab my arm, like take them to a table. what are you kidding? I'm here for a fight. Well, no. You look.
I hate to break this to you, Sugar. Your attractiveness had little to do with your appeal while walking through Caesar's Palace.
Ah, I see. Maybe I figured this all wrong. Beauty was in the eye of the drunk beholder. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they were more interested in what you had in your right front pocket than they were in any other pocket. I can tell you that right now.
There's some straight lines here I don't want to get into.
I hear you. Pacquiao Mayweather, if it happens, and here's the question I don't know if we've ever talked about. And if we did, I can't remember what your answer was. Who wins?
The better fighter is Floyd, by far.
Right.
But Pacquiao is such a ferociously active fighter, he might be able to turn Floyd's assets into his. By that I mean Floyd loves, though he stands in the center of the ring, he'll stand up to you. He also has a proclivity to lean against the ropes. And that's exactly what Pacquiao wants.
Right.
And it's not a shoulder here and a shoulder there when the punches are coming like that of a Tommy gun, rat-a-tat-tat. So while Floyd is a better fighter, and off the top of my hat, I would say Floyd wins against Pacquiao. I have it maybe 6-5 Floyd. And the irony is if Pacquiao takes another fight in the interim, I would move him ahead because he is more active before the fight than Floyd. And Floyd's 34, soon to be 35. And for a boxer, this ain't a young man.
It is great to hear your voice. We're glad you're feeling a little bit better. We wish you a complete and full recovery from whatever it was that ailed you, even if they didn't find out what it was. And
Well, I just got a call from Mark Taffet of HBO. He said he was looking forward to working with the greatest pain in the ass he had ever met. And I'm looking to get back to it, too.
Thanks, Bert. We'll see you soon, pal.
All right, please. Stay in touch. My pleasure.
Bert Randolph Sugar. We'll come back and tell you what's coming up when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet.
Nigel Reed and Bobby Arushi score big on The Soccer Show tonight at 8. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I hate critiques. The president just came in and said he was in an office there watching the show, but the sound wasn't on. And apparently I was sitting here with my mouth open for the longest time. They thought the picture had frozen or I died. I was probably just listening to something somebody was saying. If I'm sitting here for any length of time with my mouth open, tell me, will you? Close your mouth, idiot. How long have I got, Neil? Not long. Here's the music. He didn't even have to answer. In the next hour, Alex Anthopoulos, Managing General, Toronto Blue Jays, in studio. First time. 40 minutes. That and more coming up on Primetime.